all we can do. We'll cross our fingers. All right. That'd be great.
Michael?
No, thanks.
Okay, one more.
I'll be your staff today.
All right, thanks.
So, you have staff.
Seriously, we're all here to help, so absolutely.
I was afraid. Yeah, we have a lot. We have a pretty good cross section of stuff.
I love your facility. You have everything from the business.
I was telling residents about selling them to the
I'll divide a letter. You went really well. Right now.
That was open to the general public.
Open to the general public. It was a big room. It was only almost 400 people.
I've been in the courts when it comes to whenever they held it.
No, we had it at the rec center. By the pool, which is a pool in Colorado.
I would agree.
Yeah, so we have a number of elected. There's a 13 by the year.
I saw him like this.
There's Brian over there. Well, his constituents are affected as well. It's okay. It's a public meeting. Public enough.
Public enough. Absolutely. And it's just regular.
All right. You ready to go, Mr. Commissioner?
Hello.
After the presentation, I'll move to this.
Okay, can everybody hear me okay? All right, let's go ahead and get started. It's just a little bit after 4. And just to make sure, this is the Fire Insurance Stakeholder Roundtable meeting with State Commissioner, Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara. And tonight we have a really broad cross-section of stakeholders from the community. They include realtors, insurance agents, business owners, particularly in the upcountry. Also, timber interests are represented here, elected officials, fire agencies and emergency responders, the Fire Safe Council, vegetation management enterprises, hopefully the U.S. Forest Service and BLM, local water agencies, economic development interests, environmental groups, and members of the public. And pretty much everybody here is a member of the public, and a lot of the people in this room have also been experiencing renewals, which is, I guess, a nice. So anyway, we're here to really learn from Commissioner Lara what he's learned about this problem, what some of his proposals and ideas are, and hopefully we can share with him our experiences and also try to develop what are the directions forward. Just a little bit about Commissioner Lara. He grew up in Los Angeles, and he was in the state legislature as a representative of Assembly District 50 for 2 terms, one term. Then he ran for the Senate and was elected to the Senate, and then in 2018 he ran for Insurance Commissioner, and now was elected to the office of Insurance Commissioner. So I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Lara.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's great to be back here in Jackson. As we share with the community and a lot of our community leaders here, some of the findings and some of the trends that we've been seeing since I took office in January when it comes to the issues of people losing, and this constant issue that we are seeing now with our extreme weather. As you know, as we speak, there's roughly around 6 major fires going on throughout the entire state of California, which again, and I say this because it really indicates and shows and demonstrates that this is a California-wide problem. This isn't just a rural issue. This is an issue that's happening all across our state, and we need to get a handle of this before it continues to spiral out of control. We know what happens to communities when people can no longer, one, afford their home insurance or actually obtain homeowners insurance. Then you can't sell your home. You can't sell your home. Then it, you know, unravels the entire real estate market in that community, which in turn means less resources for already so many of our local communities that are already strapped for cash. And so this is a trickle-down effect that continues to happen and really affecting our rural communities the most, but we're seeing this now impact the entire state. And so when we have this discussion, we really talk about this broadly as a California problem that we need to tackle on head-on now before it continues to exacerbate throughout the entire state. And so the presentation today that I'm going to give before we open it up to questions, it's really an amalgamation of that data, of those issues that we've been seeing throughout the state since we started doing these convenings with community leaders to really talk about this issue. And I want to quickly go through these slides and then open it up for questions and talk to you about our strategy moving forward. I have my staff here from our outreach staff. If my staff can raise their hand, please, I want to make sure they know where they're at. At any time, if you have any questions or a particular question regarding an issue with your property or a friend's property, a family member's property, or you think you have a case, our staff is here to actually sit down with you and walk you through that process of how do we open a case for you so that we can help you through an individual problem. Additionally, I have 2 members of my senior team here, my Deputy Commissioner Tony Signorelli, who's here, and my special counsel, Joe Lauscher, who will combine have many years in the department and have been tracking this issue as well, and are going to help me answer some of the questions you might have as we move forward. So I'll quickly move through the presentation. Where do I point this to? Right. Up here? Okay. I want to point it to the screen for some reason.
Ricardo, why don't you bring it to me for a second?
It worked a second ago. Oh. No. You want to just be my slide changer? Fire stick at home. Okay. Well, you could go back now. Oh, shoot. There goes the whole presentation. Ta-da.
Am I heading back? All right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to let you do it because... Is it?
I thought it was.
Okay, well, I'll try it. So these are the Amador-specific numbers that we've been seeing from 2018. Non-renewals are up. 327 non-renewals in Amador County by insurance companies just last year. Mind you, these numbers don't take into account 2019. So we know it's going to continue to grow. Premium increases, more than 100 rate increases have been filed by insurance companies statewide in 2017-2018. Fewer homes are being insured by traditional homeowners insurance companies, and we know that the fair plan coverage is not as comprehensive as traditional coverage, and we have some ideas for that. So I know some of you saw like only 327. This is data that the insurance companies have to report to us now, and that has been reported for 2017-2018. This does not include 2019 numbers. We're going to wait to get those, but we anticipate that those are going to continue to rise. So what is driving these non-renewals and this issue that we're facing here in California? As you know, 10 of the 20 most destructive wildfires in California's history have occurred in the last 4 years. And as risk increases, of course, the cost of insurance increases and the availability of coverage decreases. And what's hurting us the most is that insurance companies consider the very recent past to underwrite and to determine rates for the very near future. So to date, and this does not include the fires that are going on now, it's roughly been $25 billion in losses in 2017 and 2018 to the insurance market. And underwriting rules are also changing. As you may know, the old school way was really to come to your property, look at it, investigate, and make sure that you had the traditional defensible space, that you did the home hardening, and then you would be written a policy. Now, things are very different, as we've seen. Now you have to get filtered through satellite imagery that only really looks at fuel load, slope, and the type of fuel and access. We don't think that's fair. We think it's not taking into account what individual people have done in their property, in their dwelling. Instead of now, what you have to go through is this, you know, essentially circle that really doesn't tell you much, that doesn't take into account that granular level changes that you have done in your home. And so we have some ideas of what we're asking in terms of authority to look at how we can make the satellite imagery, one, validated, and how can we help you appeal your fire risk score. Right now we have no authority to do that whatsoever. So insurance consumers, we know, these are some of the defining issues that we feel are important that we've seen over the last couple months since we took office. We know that non-renewals seem completely unfair, especially when there's no consideration to your individual tenure or claims history. Some of you have never had a claim before, and you're still getting dropped, even if you've been with the same company for over 30 years. We hear this story over and over again. There's no consideration for your pre-fire mitigation or your home hardening or fire hardening. Some we've heard time and time again, insurance companies come in, they say, we need you to do all these different things, and then you pay all this money to do it, and you still get dropped. And so we think it's completely unfair for them then to come in and have you do all these renovations and home hardening things when then at the end of the day they're still not renewing you, right? And even if you have no change to your individual risk, many of you have come up and said, I have had no claims, my risk score is still the same, and I'm still getting dropped without anybody coming to my home or letting me know. They just send me the letter with the 45-day notice, and I'm being dropped. We also know that there's no clear statewide standards for fire resistance structure or mitigation of your property. And for us, this is very important because this is a way that we can actually be proactive in lessening the risk. If we come up with what are our statewide mitigation standards that we're going to abide by at a community level, so that then we are all lowering the risk, and if this doesn't fall on the individual homeowner, there's a strategy statewide. Right now what exists is kind of a patchwork of different county programs, city programs, that you're being asked to mitigate your property, and you're still getting dropped. So what we want is to actually create some sort of a working group with the insurance industry and our first responders and our wildfire experts to come and say, okay, let's come together, talk about and figure out what are those mitigation standards that we want to see in the community. So when the community does these mitigation standards, then we could keep our emitted market insurance carriers inside in the community because they've been part of the discussion of what they want to see us in terms of how do we mitigate our entire community, not just parcel per parcel. We want an entire mitigation plan for the community, and we know that it's got to be flexible enough to make sure that it fits the unique characters of each of our communities across the state. We also know that the FAIR Plan has insufficient coverage limits. The limits hadn't been updated since the 70s. So we've been working, and we have representation here from the FAIR Plan, and thanks to the conversations we've had, have agreed to raise their coverage limits from 1.5 to 3 million, which we feel are much, it's a much better coverage and really reflects the changes and the home prices now in California. So we were successful in getting that done. We also know that many homeowners are on fixed incomes, purchase these homes, and obtain insurance long before this confluence of issues that have been going on with extreme weather, extreme heat, the winds, and many people that have been that moved into these communities have essentially been priced out of the urban core. And so it's not like everybody here in these communities have multi-million dollar homes. These are folks living on very fixed incomes. A lot of our seniors or a lot of our veterans move up to these communities because it is the only place they could find some sort of affordable housing. And we're going to need to figure out how we help them, as well as our middle class folks, pay for the mitigation that needs to happen to keep their homes safe. So the legislature has done several bills this session and the past session to try to really address what's happening in this phenomenon that we've seen. In my opinion, it still kind of just goes around the periphery and doesn't really get to what we need to do to really curtail what's happening, but these are good starts. When I was in the Senate, we created a bill got signed into law that said non-renewal, it really essentially gives non-renewal protection for all homeowners in a disaster area and that suffer total and that do not suffer total loss. What we were seeing is that insurance companies, even if your home did not suffer a total loss in a specific fire, you were still getting dropped. So we wanted to add an additional year of protection before they got non-renewed. We've seen Assemblymember Wood, for example, AB 38. We're starting to look at how do we fund mitigation programs for our community. We know this is this is thousands of dollars that people have to spend to mitigate and harden their home. We start now in the legislature start looking at how do we start providing resources for our community so they can start working towards actually hardening their home. Assemblymember Wood created a state-level fund created to provide financial assistance to homeowners to help pay for the cost of home hardening. One of the big issues that we've been talking about is only the current law says that you have 45 days in terms of the insurance company has to give you 45 days notice before they non-renew you. We think that's completely inappropriate. That's not enough time to help you find alternatives. The legislature passed a bill and signed it into law that now gives us 75 days advance notice. I still think that's not enough time. I want 180 days. You need to have multiple months to be able to help you understand first what's happening, what your options are, and then give you the opportunity to figure out what's the best decision for you and your family. 75 days, we feel it's an improvement, but it's nowhere near enough time. And we've been seeing this just by the number of cases and people that we've been talking to over the last couple months that seem that that 45 days was completely unfair. We still think, although it's an improvement, 75 days, we still want more time so that people can understand what their options are. The governor has acknowledged that we need to do more. In his signing of the 75-day bill by Assemblymember Daley, acknowledged that we need to come up with additional solutions, as he's already declared a state of emergency in California with the recent fires as well. So these are some of the things that we want to look forward to, that we are planning on introducing either through initiatives statewide or through policy. We're still working on that. But really, it's time for us to provide financial incentives to middle-income homeowners and assistance to seniors, low-income homeowners, to mitigate their properties. The fact is that people can barely afford their insurance now, and then we're asking them to still put money out of their own pocket to harden their homes. It's not realistic. We can put as many mitigation, as many building code upgrades, but if people can't afford to make the changes, it's not going to work. And so we need to sit down and figure out how do we create incentive programs. And that can either be a tax break, it could be a loan forgiveness program, and it could be a subsidy for our lowest income residents. We need to require insurance companies to write you a home, to write your home, and give you a policy if you perform the acceptable mitigation standards. And we need to force them to do that. Because we're not asking and saying that you need that an insurance company has to write in an entire neighborhood. But if you have done everything to harden your home, you follow the rules, then you should be able to find an insurance policy in an admitted carrier in California so that we don't have to deal with this non-renewal issue. And this is going to be a tough issue because the insurance companies are going to fight me tooth and nail. They're going to say we're going to disrupt markets. They're going to say you don't have the authority to do that, which I currently don't. But look, we know we're going through this difficult situation, but pre-2015, insurance companies were doing really well in the state. And so now it's time to have them help us out. Because what ends up happening is everybody being sent to the FAIR Plan is not what we want. We want people still in a competitive insurance market, and we need to figure out how to keep insurers writing in these parts of California, especially if you've done everything that you've been told to do in terms of hardening your home, protecting your home, and protecting your property. I said earlier we want to increase the time to up to 180 days to give you an opportunity to shop around. And I get it when we say shop around. Some of you have done that already, and the only option you have is the FAIR Plan because nobody else will even return your calls. We know that that's happening in these parts of California. And we want to require greater transparency in rate setting and in non-renewals. We want to know if insurance companies are taking into account these non-renewals when they come up and ask the department for a rate setting. And we also want more transparency in these fire risk models. Right now, we don't have any tools to be able to go into what this black box is of information and why is somebody getting a 4 or a 5 and not giving you an opportunity to appeal that process. These are some of the plans, some of the things we're working on with the FAIR Plan. We said earlier they've agreed to increase from 1.5 million to 3 million happening in early 2020. We also are working with them to make sure that the FAIR Plan is actually a comprehensive plan. That if you're going to be sent to the FAIR Plan, you have one plan. That you don't have to go around and buy wraparound or companion policies because that's only adding to the cost that you're already having to pay. And we know that the majority of your the bill that you get for insurance companies is the administrative fee. So guess what? Every time you buy the wraparound insurance or a companion policy, you're paying administrative fee on top of administrative fee. So we want the FAIR Plan, if that's going to be the only plan of last resort, that it's actually a comprehensive plan. And you don't have to worry about getting additional wraparound coverage. We want to allow the FAIR Plan policyholders to be able to make monthly payments and pay by credit card. I mean, those are things that should be no-brainers. And currently, you're not allowed to make monthly payments or pay by credit card. I mean, it's time to, we got to modernize the FAIR Plan, and this is what we're working with them as well. We want to add more consumer representation to the FAIR Plan board so that consumers have more of a voice on the FAIR Plan, especially as this continues to happen and these issues continue to exacerbate. We need more consumers on the board to be able to represent the work and what the struggles are of many Californians. So I was hinting towards this earlier, the wildfire risk scores that we all know. We want to require greater transparency of these fire risk score models. We want to require that these models take into account community and individual mitigation, and current models don't do that. They don't come into your neighborhood. They give you a number, and that number, nobody has any idea how they came up with, and that's your new number, and that means you either get renewed or you get dropped. We want to be able to have some public review of these models and have them open to the public so that we know how they validate these models, what is the process that they're using, so that we understand how these models are being replicated and how are they coming up with their different scores. And we want to give homeowners an opportunity to appeal the risk score. Right now, you have no opportunity to appeal your score, and even if you believe it's on wrong information, if they've never come to your house, if they haven't seen what you've done to harden your home, we want an opportunity for you to be able to appeal your score, open that up to public review so we can determine how they came up with that score, and then give you time to rectify and do any changes you need to do in your home to maybe perhaps less than that score. Right now, there's no opportunity for you to do any of these things. And why we say we want to give consumers time to address mitigation issues to lower the risk score. We think these are just fair things to do for the consumer. If you get a risk score, how did they come up with that number? What do I need to do to appeal? And what do I need to do to lessen that score? These are all things that, to me, are common sense and that the consumer has been asking for. So in closing, before we go to the Q&A, I just want to remind you that how does our department respond to an incident, which we already have people ready to dispatch throughout California to address these recent fires. One of the things that I did in early January, right after I got in office, one of the things was I wanted to bring the Department of Insurance to you all. Have our staff here and answer the questions as opposed to wait for you to call us or you either go to LA or Sacramento. I wanted to make sure we brought actually our teams here to the affected areas so that we can have these conversations with you, because these conversations, then internally we put together a document, and this is what we use to talk to the governor and talk to the legislators when we're asking them to make these critical changes. We have that consumer hotline, and I know a lot of people get anxiety when I say a 1-800 number, but we have live people behind those phones actually answering the call Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, answering your questions. And not only that, but we have our enforcement team that also looks at if you feel you've been a victim of any type of insurance fraud, we connect you to our law enforcement unit that we deploy and do the investigations as well. So, and of course, we have our local assistance centers that we're, again, going to be opening in Santa Rosa and throughout Southern California to address these recent fires. That's the work that we currently do. Those are live people from our department, so they're not models. They actually exist, and I want to reiterate that phone number is there to really serve you, and you can go online as well to be able to get the information that you need and talk to a live person. This concludes my presentation. I think we open it up to Q&A, if I'm not correct. And I'll have Tony and Joel come up with me to answer some of your questions. But I really thank you for taking the time to be here. This really is important for us to continue to build the dialogue and take the notes that we need as we continue to fight to make sure we make these changes that we need in Sacramento to better protect you and every California consumer. Thank you.
So does anybody have any questions?
I know I'm Bob Barker now. There's a question over there. Tony, do you guys want to just... It's down for a little bit. It's okay. So give me a workers' comp claim after.
That as the insurance commissioner, you don't have much... you have power over the insurance company.
So currently we are looking... Well, our essential job is to review rate filings, and if they are actually sound, and if they're not discriminating and, you know, do everything by the book, we essentially approve those rates. That is the bread and butter. And we have to, in the department, my job is to make sure that we have a strong, thriving insurance market, which means we have enough, insurance companies have enough resources to pay out claims, right? And when a company, falls over, then it is our job to make sure we make them solvent and that we protect California consumers, and everybody gets paid out what they need to, especially if they have claims. So that's what we do. We are currently looking at, and we don't have that slide here, at our regulatory authority to push for maybe potentially a moratorium on these non-renewals. We are looking at what is our regulatory authority when it comes to when companies come in to file a rate increase, and then we approve it, and the very next day they submit another rate increase. And we want some time for the market to stabilize, and we want the insurance companies to give us time to see how these current increases are going to impact consumers. So what essentially happens, they'll come in for a 6.9 increase per se, right? And our actuaries look at it and say it's justified given the losses that they've had and their portfolio, but that impacts people very differently. we just had a case where this 6.9 increase might not look threatening for folks, but when you dig into the numbers like we did, it would mean that certain people in Southern California and urban areas would get a decrease in their insurance policy, and then some folks in some of the rural Northern California areas would have up to a 200% increase. And so what then we go in and we start negotiating, trying to get caps, trying to figure out how we socialize the cost on everybody. That's exactly what we do when these rate filings come in. But we're currently looking at our regulatory authority in terms of a moratorium. We are looking at how do we create some more space before a company wants to come in for an additional rate increase. And we're also looking at our regulatory power of mandating coverage in communities where they're not renewing and where people are doing the home hardening. So we're going to test our regulatory authority. You bet they're going to sue us. You bet they're going to fight us. But it's something that we need to do because what's happening in California is devastating so many communities.
Yeah, so maybe about the 10 years prior to 2015, insurers had a loss ratio of about 50%, a little under that. They were paying out less than 50 cents on every dollar that came in. Sometimes their loss ratios dropped into the 30-something percentile, 40-something, couple years 50-plus. So they were doing great, and then 2017 hit, and they had a 200% loss ratio, so that $25 billion was from 17 and 18. 2017, they had a 200% loss ratio, so they paid out $2 on every dollar they brought in. And then the next year, they had a 170% loss ratio, so $1.70 paid out on every dollar the industry took in. And, you know, so that's changed their thinking in the just pulling out of a lot of areas and not kind of considering all the years where they made lots of money and it was great, and then, you know, a couple of bad years and you know, they're doing just a dramatic reversal on where they want to write. You know, the commissioner's proposal of having them continue to write hardened homes is really just kind of a compromise, right? It's not mandating they renew everybody, and, you know, it's still a voluntary market where the insurers choose to write what they want, basically. But for writing all that good business of California, we want them to do that little bit more of when the person's done all they can, the insurer still has to be in the game for them.
Hi, I live up in an area that's in our District 3, which is all four. A lot of the people that I speak with are over 60, retired, and on extremely low fixed income. Many of them also live in mobile homes. So as you go forward with some of these plans that you mentioned or hope to go forward with, are you, one, going to take into consideration mobile home dwellers as well? And as you write, say, financial reimbursement and subsidies, not to ask the people to pay for it and then be reimbursed. That is an impossibility for most people. So that would be a small detail. And thirdly, I'm sorry, is this information going to be on the website, or is it possible to get a copy of any of this, especially the slide on the legislation that passed?
With regard to the mobile homes, yes. I mean, that's single-family homes, mobile homes. That's all part and parcel of the solutions that we're seeking to do here. We're also looking to actually do an outreach to all the mobile home parks because we have heard, in fact, in the Cal Mesa fire down in Southern California, the people that we met with after those fires a few weeks ago, about 35-40% of them didn't have insurance because they didn't know where to go for insurance, even though the FAIR plan would have insured them. They either didn't know about it, or maybe they didn't like the price. So, yeah, and so it's a mixture, but we want to make sure that at a minimum, everyone in those parks knows the availability, number one, to shop around and go to our website and get some information there on how to shop around. But a worst-case scenario, get the FAIR plan so that they're not left uninsured should there be a fire.
And some of the mobile home park owners, when we met, said that they didn't know that the FAIR plan covered mobile home parks or mobile homes. And some of them, even if they got their notice, didn't know that the FAIR plan even existed. So one of the things that we're looking into is current law says that, you know, an insurance company has to put the FAIR plan information in the non-renewal. We think it should just be a separate letter talking about the FAIR plan, not something that has a five-page letter where the FAIR plan is kind of, you know, dug in there. We want a separate notice that specifically talks about the FAIR plan option so that people understand that it's a solution. And I get it that it's, in some cases, not affordable, but at least we want people to start having those conversations. And when it came to your question about, you know, this is why everything from tax breaks to loan forgiveness programs to subsidies are everything we're looking at, depending on the income level. But we know that our seniors, one, cannot afford the home hardening and can't do it themselves. So that only exacerbates the cost, especially for our seniors and our folks who are disabled. So we know that.
Can you hear me? In the case of mitigation, whether it's done by the individual property owner or state assisted, do you see some issues that are going to come from environmental requirements as far as removal of trees and brush in an expeditious manner? And could you maybe share a little insight on that? Can we speed this thing along so that we get some of this stuff taken out?
Yeah, I think those conversations where you had some folks against, you know, kind of thinning the forest or looking at, I think those conversations, now people really understand the need to get this done as quickly as possible. And now people understand the importance of tending to our forest, making sure that we are working with our environmental friends, but they also understand that this is a matter of life and death and that we have to move quickly. Even the discussions that we've had, the environmental folks have been very supportive of the work that we're trying to do so that we help save people's lives. So I think the conversation has shifted. I'll say when I was in the assembly a couple years ago, it was a point of contention with the environmentalist. It's often more, how do we provide the resources so it's being done right, so that we're tending to the forest correctly and we're mitigating everything in a way that is quickly, expeditiously, and that doesn't really decimate environmental topography or landscape.
In a previous meeting down in Sacramento with you and then continuing the conversation last week with Senator Andreas Borges that came up, we talked about possibly creating a wildland fire policy so that possibly the carriers could put the incidental kitchen fire or garage fire back into a policy. He made a comment that there's some discussions going on in legislation with the Earthquake Authority and that Southern California was concerned about tsunami and earthquake, where the rural areas are more concerned about fire. And he made a comment that it could possibly be under one umbrella for a catastrophic type of fire policy.
Yeah, so that conversation, and you're essentially saying putting the risk in one, putting folks that are most at risk in one pool, right? And we keep going back and forth on this because this is, some people come up and ask us about this. We just don't see how putting the people that are most at risk in one pool and then trying to convince insurance companies to cover this very risky pool of folks. And if we were to do that, if that only exacerbates the affordability of the insurance product. Right now, we're essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong, the fire pool is all, we're all in it. The entire state is in it. If we were then just to collect folks from wildfire risk pool, I don't know if that one helps us or if it just exacerbates the problem of not being able to get insurers to cover some of the riskiest homes. I don't know if you want to follow up on that.
No, and with regard to pooling, let's say, the different catastrophes together, right? Everything's on the table, you know, in terms of what the possible solutions are, but there's difficulties and challenges with each of those options. As the commissioner mentioned, you know, there already is a fire risk pool, and it's the FAIR plan, and it's based on the losses that you have. And so the losses are going to be the same regardless of where, you know, where you are. And as the commissioner mentioned, that we're not seeing where the math is working out yet, where the availability is already with the FAIR plan. So really it's an affordability issue, and the issue is whether if the math has not really worked out from what we're able to see, that your rates would go any lower if you were to separate out those risks and put them all into one pool.
You know, just add the fact that maybe people think they'd want to pay for the insurance for the kitchen fire and maybe not buy the wildfire coverage, and that really leads to the possibility of having no coverage when you have your worst loss, as opposed to having a policy that will pay for a loss that most people might be able to afford anyway or is less likely to occur. It kind of encourages people to be underinsured for the likelihood of a total loss, which really puts them in the worst situation possible.
But again, we're trying to, you know, put every solution that people bring up to us at the table. There's been discussions about, well, if an insurance company doesn't no longer want to carry homeowners policy in a certain area, then we should not let them be in the entire California market. And those are conversations we're having within the department. And there's been conversations about creating a public option for insurance for the state. We don't have the money to be able to backfill should we have a major catastrophe as a state to be able to provide and be able to pay out claims. But again, we're looking at all these options as we continue to go across the state on what possible actions we can take. So, you know, we're putting everything at on the table. I think there was a question back here. Oh, here and then here.
Hi. That's okay. Insurance companies sell one thing, risk. I send them money, and they take risk for me. Sometimes there's a third party involved because of a mortgage or what have you. Going through the, pardon me, unfair plan, I just wrote a huge check for about half the coverage, if I even got that. So these are factors beyond myself or our group up country. It's control. These fires that are devastating, such as the Paradise issue last few years or last year, where we got to share this burden. But my feeling is if an insurance company, as you had mentioned earlier, had 30% loss ratios or 50%, and now we have an odd year, that the world's losing its mind right now, and what are we going to do? We're seeing the fallout. I'm sorry, I didn't start the fire. All right. The culprit is out there. We all know who it is. And things are happening along those lines. But in the meantime, what I saw here on the presentation is a good start. But it's not strong enough. Insurance companies need to step up this big time. This is the fifth largest economy on the planet. One of the largest insurance markets in the United States. And folks like me that worked 50 years to get where we are, and we have a wonderful home, and it's beautiful, and we pay the bills, and we've done everything that we've asked. Cal Fire's given us 100%. Doesn't matter. I can't go out 100 feet because I share a property line with Sierra Pacific Industries. They're not going to go, let me cut 100 feet back into their tree. And the hardening that you're talking about, again, you got to reach in your pocket.
Right.
But $600 a month for half the insurance coverage that I had prior, that's wrong. That's just wrong.
And we agree with you completely. And this is why, you know, we need to, in our attempts to push back, we remind the insurance companies, one, California is the number one insurance market in the country, fourth in the world. And so during the days when we didn't have these anomalies and everybody, and you know, they were going gangbusters, it was fine. But now we're in this situation where consumers need help and insurance companies need to, you know, understand that these are consumers that you've had for many years. And why we think we need to push back. And I'll tell you, we're at a moment, even though it's happening in areas, a part of California where it's happening, it's really decimating communities. When we look at the issue as a statewide issue, we can still, I think, really grapple with it. I think we're at a point where we can still come in, make these critical changes, and be able to, you know, lower the rate, provide the coverage before it continues to expand greater and one day hopefully not be outside of our control. Right now the issue is, in my opinion, still containable enough to be able to address this and why we need to push for these critical reforms. But I agree with you 100%. You're absolutely right. After, I'm just pointing after.
I live in a community that's actually done a lot. They got a community wildfire plan. They put a couple of $1 million into it. I myself have spent $42,000 on forest thinning, on a fixed income. And yet our insurance situation is worse. No connection between the realities on the ground and what's going on. You've already spoken to this. But I want to talk about one specific thing about the FAIR plan, which I not that. So people who are trying to sell their property and go through a normal mortgage are being asked to prove insurance before they can buy it.
Right.
This is devastating a market that's already in turmoil. Rural economies that are being asked to bear the burden of managing the watershed for millions of people downstream with very little contribution up. There's all these relationships that have not been developed in a partnership. I rode a fire truck down to the Oakland fire on a mutual aid when that whole town was burning. We have fire departments that seem to understand the ability to move between communities and support one another. And yet here in 3% of this state is in this rural Sierra. And we're being asked to manage the forest, either get the grants or pay for it ourselves, fix our homes, and in the middle of this, our economies are being ruined and our ability to even sell a home has become much diminished. I think the Band-Aids that you've described are very laudable. It's nice to see somebody paying attention for a change. But this is Band-Aids on deep gashes, and I wonder if anybody's studying the impact on rural insurance crisis is creating. Not just the people who are getting dropped, but the people who will never buy here because they can't afford it.
Right.
Everybody says this is a place where people who can't afford a decent home come to be able to build one or live here. And it's a great place to live, but it's becoming unviable. What are you doing about the markets that are creating crisis in rural California and not being supported by people who are drinking our water, building homes with their timber, and not recognizing the relationship between the upcountry and the downstream?
Absolutely, and that's why I'm here. I am the first insurance commissioner to actually come out to these communities and have these conversations. Two, we are engaging our California Association of Realtors and really having really fruitful discussions about how do we engage our realtor community, because this is really impacting the entire real estate market. Like I said earlier, if you can't sell your home, you know, and if you can't find insurance, you can't sell your home, which means then the devaluation of that property, which in turn means your local governments get less money for critical services. So this is the message that we're sending, and it is not just a rural issue. This is happening across the entire state. And that is the message we're taking to legislators and what we've been doing at these town halls, inviting them to become part of this. And you're going to see us be much more aggressive in January when the legislature convenes, because we can't wait. If we continue to ignore this issue, this is going to devastate not only rural California, but urban areas that are now subject to this new reality that we're living in with these extreme wildfires.
Hi, I'm Bo Gilman from Matich Vukovic Insurance. I own a local brokerage here. And I was wondering how likely it would be to make the fair up with a comprehensive policy that didn't need that DIA. Because what we're running into, which is an E&O nightmare for us, is the mobile manufactured home. We can't find that DIC or wrap. We're having commercial LROs and wineries being canceled. We can't find that DIC or wrap. You know, we're hearing the consumer story here, but this is nightmarish for us. It's we're losing business. I really think if we don't have an option right now, they're planning to come up with that comprehensive plan that covered everything would be helpful. But aside from that, we're getting these non-renewals on the homes. These insurance companies are asking us to not send them standalone auto, but they won't write the home. I mean, we're in a tough spot.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good point. A lot of people have been pointing out that insurers are still writing the good or more predictive business, which is automobile, and also taking the better part of the homeowner's market and then deeming one component of it high risk and withdrawing there. So, you know, we have a FAIR Plan representative here. The FAIR Plan generally has been taking the position that they don't want to write a homeowner's policy because they don't want to compete with homeowners insurers, and they don't want to compete with insurers that are selling difference in conditions policies. But the commissioner's point that he stressed earlier is, you know, our position at the department is a huge portion of any premium you pay for any coverage is the administrative cost and the tuition. And you are paying that twice when you buy a FAIR Plan policy and a difference in conditions policy. Insurers don't sell so many difference in conditions policies that it's kind of created a kind of a market that brings the price down, right? It's kind of a specialty coverage, so it stays pretty expensive, close to two-thirds of the cost of the homeowner's policy that you can't buy anymore. So a lot of people, and this is another concern, end up with no DIC, and not only are they without those perils on their home, but there's no liability coverage if somebody walks on their property and falls, or if they have someone work on their property who is injured that would have been covered by the workers' compensation piece of a homeowner's policy. So we think it's critical that insurers won't write you the homeowner's policy, and that sends you to the FAIR Plan, that the FAIR Plan should then offer you a homeowner's policy. But this is a battle that the commissioner is going to fight if we can't get that done voluntarily.
So we're looking at we have regulatory authority to mandate it to do that. And so our attorneys are looking at that as we speak. I don't want to give you the entire strategy here. You know, but absolutely. What people say when they say, when the FAIR Plan says they don't want to compete, they don't understand that you have no other option. Nobody else is writing. Nobody else wants to write in these communities. So the FAIR Plan becomes the only option. And if you can't get the wraparound insurance, what do you do? So it's not like the FAIR Plan is competing already with the market. There's no competition because nobody wants to compete with them in these areas, right? And so they need to be providing a comprehensive plan. That's my opinion. And so we're looking at our legal authority to figure out how we get that done, and we're trying to make sure that we're in our best legal footing to make sure that that happens. That's why we haven't really, you know, pursued it right now. But we're in the process of getting that done. We're also looking, and so you all know, in not only in addition to mandating that insurance companies cover homes that have done the home hardening, but that they actually offer discounts just like good driving discounts, which currently they do not offer, and we would need to change state law to make sure that that happens, because we think, how do also we incentivize people from doing to do the right thing and protect their home? And we think these discounts and mitigation discounts are important, just like we do with good drivers. So, go ahead. Yeah.
The fare plan rates are also based on the loss experience of the fare plan. So, you know, if they right now their rates have gone up because they have experienced a lot of losses themselves, particularly down in Southern California. And so, you know, if the fare plan writes more of the market or less of the market, their rates are always based on their loss ratios. So the same things the commissioner is proposing for the voluntary market of getting more people to do home hardening and, you know, spread the risk there would benefit the fare plan as well.
So just to give some clarity from our perspective, one, you know, from the comprehensive side of it, you know, as we were established in 1968, we are mandated not to compete. So as it exists, our perspective, we're open to do whatever we can to make this more reasonable for you. The coverage is more reasonable. But as it stands today, we're an organization with 60 employees, and our infrastructure does not provide the full comprehensive program because the products are available. There's a couple different ways to look at it. One, the DIC market, from my perspective, there are some areas of opportunity there with mobile homes, especially when they're on acreage. But where we're looking at, if you have a DIC policy, which is the companion, also known as a companion policy, with a carrier that you have auto insurance with, your excess liability, which is your umbrella insurance, you're able to get significant discounts that definitely make that beneficial. So obviously we understand the opportunity to want to have everything in one policy, but regardless, you're going to have additional lines of business within your household, and the power of getting the discount from, you know, the excess liability, the umbrella, your toys, your boat, your RVs, as well as the auto, is still very significant because you can tie that with the DIC options that are out there. Some discounts we are working on right now is with today on our books, we have the FireWise community discount, which isn't as prevalent in Northern California, so we're working with the California Fire Safe Council with their board right now, because we are trying to incorporate as many discounts as we can. We're getting very creative, as well as for discounts for higher deductibles, choices of higher deductibles. We're working on that. We know that's an area of opportunity right now. The sweet spot from a deductible standpoint and pricing is about $2,500. If you go up to $10,000, which ordinarily is a big statement to an insurance carrier that you're willing to assume $10,000, that's a significant discount. That's somebody that's not going to have a frequency claim. They're just going to have severe claims. That discount should be steep, but today that is not. So that is something we're trying to fix. Yes, sir? There's lots of things that are on the table. We really just came into play very significantly starting around December in this situation. And just like you, it unfolded for you. And we're aware that there's opportunities with our programs, our products, credit card options. We have a vendor. We're hoping by the end of the year to have that online, payment options as well. But again, we're very open to what's going on. We're working with the DIC carriers to make sure that they're offering they understand the products, because a lot of times your coverage will vary based on the requirements of the DIC carrier. So you, in your mindset, this is what your ideal insurance package would look like, but the DIC carrier might dictate that you increase coverage limits for coverage B or separate structures or personal property to suit their needs. And again, that forces you to buy more insurance. Another situation, you know, this is current state, as the commissioner said, home hardening is a fantastic thing. I encourage everyone to do it. The problem today is the way the policies that are available in these markets work, it actually drives your cost up for insurance because technically those materials cost more to replace. Doesn't make it right, but that's the reality of it. If you factor in the siding or the decking that is more fire safe, the materials are more expensive. So it's gonna, so there should be discounts applied, not right.
Right, and there's certainly some checks that the department does with regard to financial solvency of all the companies, and the companies do their own checks with regard to the concentration levels within certain areas. Merced was a unique situation. It was the first homeowners insurance company to ever go under, and it was just a fluke given the uniqueness of the Paradise and the Campfire issue. And to let you know also, the $500,000 limit on SIGA, which is the guarantee fund, was after our discussions with SIGA, which is that entity, they applied $500,000 to each level of coverage, so to the primary structure, the other structures, to the contents, to the additional living expenses. So that made it so less people were negatively impacted by those limits. On top of that, this year, as part of the bill, I believe it was 1816, they also increased the SIGA limit, the guarantee limit, to $1 million. So that'll help in that area.
Excuse me, I lost my voice, but Paul White, Fire Chief for Amador Fire Protection District. And first, I want to let Commissioner Lara know I really do appreciate how generous you've been with your time. I was able to be part of a previous stakeholder meeting with you and receive this information. But what I want to know is, with 58 counties in the state of California, each one has some desirable and undesirable locations to insure. Like, we've got low country areas where the water supply system is very adequate and, you know, not the slope or terrain, but, you know, our county alone goes from 50 feet of elevation to 8,000 feet of elevation and has a water supply system that is very adequate and suitable in certain areas and not in others. When EMS agencies, because there's 58 counties, but there's 33 local EMS authorities in the state, and when an ambulance company goes to bid for services, to provide services, they don't get to pick and choose winners and losers. Like, we'll provide services in just this specific part of the county or the area. They have to agree that if they're going to be the service provider, they're going to be the provider for the whole thing. Is there any thought or any possible authority or legislative that would be able to create markets that include both winners and losers, and a requirement that to write policies in that market, you have to be willing to cover the whole market, not just cherry pick?
That's exactly what we were trying to do. This is why the issue of
I feel when people, folks bring the idea of like, let's just create a risk pool of all the riskiest homes or parts of the market in one area or in one pool, I'm concerned because I want to spread it as much as possible to be able to still try to control the cost and that all of us are responsible for covering it. That's exactly what we're trying to do. And with our authority looking at how do we not, especially when it comes to the homes that have been hardened, that insurance companies don't get to cherry pick on who they cover or not. That if you've done everything to harden your home, you have an obligation to cover that home.
One last part of that. When it comes to homeowners association, is there any thoughts on limiting, you know, their authority to prevent home hardening? Because I'm actually dealing with an issue now where a homeowners association is saying that's, you know, a heritage oak and it can't be removed even though it's hazard fuel. And then the other issue we deal with here locally is with a lot of private roads. We have homeowners associations, and I've had presidents of homeowners associations tell me that I can't get 2/3 of the homeowners to vote in favor of increasing our assessment to maintain the roads we have.
Got it. This is the first time we hear of that. So if my staff can please write that down, and we'll get back to you. That is the first time we hear homeowners association trying to prevent hardening and the tending of the roads. So we'll definitely get back to you and put that into our into the mix of issues we look into. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ann Lance, Local Insurance. And I just want to point out a couple things that are sort of some grim realities about insurance. One is the reinsurance market. Most insurance companies have to buy reinsurance in order to be in business, just to make sure if they do have that multi-billion dollar loss that it is going to be covered. Those reinsurance costs have gone from very, very little in California when you compare it to like Florida or something like that, to extreme in California, getting similar to Florida and Texas, because they're starting to recognize these wildfire areas as being extremely important in the reinsurance market. So I want to recognize that as part of the reason that these companies are asking for higher rates. It's not just because of their past losses, but because of their new costs. And also, increasing the guarantee fund, I mean, that also is a cost for the insurance companies. Because when you look at Merced Mutual, it's not the state of California that took over the losses on Merced. It's all the insurance companies in the state of California. So again, those kinds of things, and the more regulation we can do towards companies that are undercapitalized is probably going to be really helpful. Because if you're undercapitalized and you're selling insurance, you can do it willy-nilly and make tons and tons of money, and then go out of business and leave the bag for the consumer and the insurance companies to hold. I'm sorry, I have a lot to say.
So our rate regulation process doesn't add those costs in, and we understand that those are costs insurers choose to buy reinsurance, right, to limit their own losses, meaning they are recovering money from the losses they just suffered. And, you know, that drives their insurance up just like your insurance is going up. When we calculate a rate approval, we don't take out the losses that the reinsurer reimbursed the insurer for either, right? So that it kind of balances out in that way. You know, the insurer, we put in all the insurer's losses as if the insurer paid them and ignore the reinsurance reimbursement portion of this. But, you know, to your point, if you increase SIGA, yes, insurers are the ones that pay for SIGA, but actually most of SIGA is a pass-through to insureds, so you would get a little additional amount that you have to pay. So insurers don't really bear the burden of SIGA. We all do. And fortunately, you know, as I mentioned, we've had very, you know, wonderful loss ratios here for decades, really. I mean, since the Oakland fire, which wasn't even anywhere near the ballpark of these recent fires. Insurers have been doing great, and now they've had, you know, three pretty bad years, two of them particularly. But overall, it's been great for the industry. So I think, you know, that's what we would hope, is that, you know, you don't have a bad year and immediately turn away. And to the degree you do, what would be reasonable to ask of you, the industry, and the hardened homes approach and you know, keeping an obligation to write the most responsible of homeowners is the way of balancing that.
I like your idea of the whole hardened homes and the creating one inspection system. I mean, I would say we already have the Fire Safe Councils, the FireWise, and CAL FIRE. And I would hope that that would be something that we would combine together. CAL FIRE is obviously the administration for that. And I would just add to that, I mean, knowing my community really, really well, and knowing that the most hardened house in the world could be, it doesn't really matter in the firestorm type situations that we've had. Paradise, I mean, it did matter to some degree, but in a lot of cases, it just doesn't matter. If it's raining fire, it's raining fire. And when you have a dead-end dirt road that you've hardened your house on and a fire truck can't get down it, I'm not sure that house should be insured. I'm just, you know, to just blanketly say, oh, look, you hardened your house. And look, you cut the trees. And we don't really care, you know, nothing else matters. We gotta sit down with the insurance companies and say, okay.
Of course. I mean, I don't wanna oversimplify that. I mean, of course there's FireWise communities, there's CAL FIRE. We wanna build upon that, and we wanna be as reasonable as possible, right? And all this also, our idea would also require that we look at, land use policies at the local level. Right, we can't, as a state, come in and tell you where you can and cannot build, but those conversations need to be had at the local level, where, you know, these decisions are being made. Local governments need to be part of that discussion because it's critical. I mean, you're absolutely right. How are we going to get to a home that's come fully hardened and there's, you know, limited ways to access that? So. The idea of us creating this task force, or either through executive order by the governor, or how we come up with these community mitigations, have to take into account local governments and their responsibility on land use issues, and so that it helps inform already what we've already built upon. But the problem that we're seeing is, even if we are FireWise, even if these fire safe councils do everything possible, you're still getting dropped. Right? And so what we want is some sort of assurance that if people do everything they can to protect their home, that they are still have access to some sort of level of coverage. But of course, that also takes into account land use issues, access, egress, ingress, all those things that were critical even in Paradise. Right? And I know we use Paradise as an example of the worst of the worst. I mean, this is what happened in Paradise is, you know, we've never seen that level of devastation. And so, you know, although we refer to Paradise, we're trying to figure out that hopefully does not become something that reoccurs every so often, right? We have to make sure that we do everything we can to mitigate that. But Paradise was something that was so out of control, and it was the worst scenario, unfortunately, you know, happening in Paradise. Right. Right. Exactly. You're absolutely right. And that's why we keep referring to community-wide mitigation. And that it takes into account local government's responsibility and land use and maintenance. It takes into account individual parcels. It's the only way I think we could be proactive, because we tend to be very reactive after the fire and trying to figure out how do we start rebuilding, how do we make sure people have the appropriate, you know, living expenses so that they can, you know, try to make decisions. How do we create flexibility so that people can get their money quicker? And if they want 100% of their inventory list covered, then they come back later and fill it out. But on the immediate is, how do we bring all this together in a way that's much more proactive at a community-wide level, so that we're looking at all the things you mentioned? It's imperative, and right now we don't have that. Right now it's just a hodgepodge of different things that don't amount to us working with the insurance companies to lessen the risk community-wide, not just parcel by parcel, which is what, you know, continues to happen. But we need to engage the insurance industry, first responders, local governments, community leaders, to figure out how do we create a proactive plan to lessen the risk for all of us in the community. And that's what we want. That's what we're trying to get done.
Talked about hardening. We've talked about, I've heard the defensible space. I've also heard about community approach.
Land use, yeah.
Now I'm on the FAIR plan. And the experience that I've had is that I can only do so much as a landowner, and I think I speak on behalf of a lot of other landowners here. I got an insurance company to underwrite the policy, and they're going to do an inspection. I may lose my policy. The thing that's important to me, though, is recognizing that I've done everything I can do, and if I have neighboring parcels that are not on FAIR plan, they still have insurance, they have not gotten a drop letter, they don't have the same incentive that I have. They don't have the same incentive that a neighbor has that has gotten their level. However, if they would also take the same approach in thinning and clearing and hardening and doing the things that they need to do, as a community, we're looking better. But we still have those right. Parcels that there is nothing being done.
And that's critical for us. We have these conversations a lot with local governments and local law enforcement. How do they help us, you know, incentivize your neighbors to do the good thing, to do the appropriate thing? And that really boils down to us working and doing a much better job of coordinating with local governments. I don't know if...
Just to put your mind at ease, the FAIR plan, we basically have to insure every home. The two things that would exclude you would be if you have an illegal operation or business at your premises, which obviously that's not an issue, or unrepaired damage. There's zero clearance required. A lot of times where some of the confusion can come in, where the DIC carrier might have different expectations. But again, we look at the condition of the roof, not the age of the roof. We'll insure a wood roof if it's in good shape. And so again, there shouldn't be, don't be concerned about the inspection. And if there's any issues specifically, everyone can feel free to take one of my cards or have your broker reach out to me. I could be happy to help out.
In our condition, I've been on FAIR plan. I'm still on FAIR plan now. I haven't canceled it, but I have another third-party insurance who's underwritten as a policy, and so that is active. Now, the difference is $4,600 policy versus a $1,600 policy. So I'm in that window now where I'm dual insured, and that third-party insurance is going to come out and conduct an inspection. If they're satisfied with it, I keep my insurance. I can cancel my FAIR plan. If they're not satisfied with it, I lose that policy and I remain on FAIR plan.
Yeah, and that's been something that's tough right now, because what genuine intentions for some of these carriers to come back or really take a hard look at your home, you know, unfortunately, I hope things are going to get to a point where they are going to look at your brush score and look at your home more specifically. But right now it's really, the no is just by putting in your address for majority of the carriers. But again, if that's the case, that's what we're here for. I mean, we win when you don't need us anymore. That's really the plan, is to not need us in the marketplace and lose our policy growth. But right now, unfortunately, we're growing.
I know, Neto. You know, one thing that's maybe a little off base, but it pertains to some of the history around here, you know, happened. Talking to a gentleman yesterday, He's always, I remember when I was a kid, they had soda pop when they did control burns around the brush fields around Shenandoah Valley. Both my grandparents burned brush fields around this area. Stopped that for a long time. So we've got a fuel loading that's immense. You can harden your home as much as you want, and the fuel loading is hot enough, made out of steel, it will fry whatever's inside. So I think that's something that should probably be part of this conversation too. And the FAIR plan, is it made up? How's it made up? And what? I guess it hasn't made a profit in a few years. FAIR plan becomes profitable at some point. What happens to those profits? Because insurance rates in the FAIR plan sure are going up.
Yeah, Joel, you want to start, and then I'll finish it.
Yeah, certainly. So the FAIR plan has had some profitable years in the recent past, and when that happens, they actually make distributions out to the insurers who are the backers of the FAIR plan. So every admitted insurer backs the FAIR plan to the extent that there's a profit or a loss. Right. So the FAIR plan charges an actuarially sound premium, means their premiums are meant to pay their losses, not make any profit. That's the goal of the FAIR plan, no profit, but to pay their own losses. And, you know, sometimes it works out that they make a profit, sometimes they lose money. If they make a profit, they can distribute it to their insurers. If they lose money, they do an assessment of the industry. Each insurer pays based on its share of the homeowner's market. So State Farm, for example, has 15% of the insurance market in California. If the FAIR plan were to lose $1 million, State Farm would reimburse $150,000 of that because they have 15%. So the years of the FAIR plan making profits look like they're in the rearview mirror. And so I don't really expect any distributions of profits. If things work out, they won't have to make assessments either. But that's how the FAIR plan works. It is supported by the insurance industry, not the taxpayer, not anyone else. It's kind of the price insurers pay for writing the business they voluntarily write. They have to back up the FAIR plan that writes the business that they don't want to write. So, you know, to Phil's point, you can't lose your FAIR plan policy. So, as long as you keep your home in an insurable condition, so it still has to have a roof, and it still has to have windows and doors and be inhabited regularly. But if it's in the middle of a forest, surrounded by trees and up a dirt road, they still do have to write it if it meets all the standards of the dwelling structure itself. So you can't lose your insurance. And one other comment for your neighbors that I'd mentioned in the back is I think one of the things probably everybody here in the audience while you're here is you know how tenuous keeping your coverage can be. And that's something you really want to communicate to your neighbors. Like, I haven't been canceled or non-renewed. So, you know, I don't need to take care of things. Well, insurers tend to renew a much higher risk of property than they write new, as new business. So you might be doing great that they're writing you at a higher risk level than they write new business, but then if you get non-renewed, if you just think you don't have to bother taking care of your property and that non-renewal comes for you, then you'll be in that place where you won't be able to find anybody to write your coverage but the FAIR plan. So people who have insurance, you know, and even though they haven't maintained their property, they should, you know, light bulb should come on that they should do everything they can to maintain coverage with the insurer they have by doing everything they can to mitigate the risk at their own property now and not get in that non-renewal cycle. Well, then you're seeking an insurance coverage that is very hard to find.
5 minutes. I want to make sure we cut our answers, and because I want to get to the rest of the questions. Go ahead.
But I was curious about possibly doing a 3-year plan for insurance companies so we can
let the market adjust
stabilize
itself,
the market
yeah.
a little bit here. Because
this is why we're
I'm in a I have several properties and I'm it's like everything else
right.
and not just it's business insurance, liability insurance,
right.
commercial property, it's
all the things you need to yeah. And this is why we were looking at the moratorium and what an appropriate moratorium would look like, because we want the markets to help adjust themselves and so that people are not constantly month to month trying to figure out what they're going to do. And we're looking at that. That's exactly what we want. We want time to for the markets to readjust themselves and so that we can give people that time to figure out, okay, what is this year going to look like?
Sorry. Commission, you guys mandate to insurance companies certain things and either stay in California or they leave California.
Well, I mean...
Mandate it as a two-year or a three-year policy that to stabilize the market. Is that an option?
In terms of the moratorium, that's what we're looking at. Exactly what you're saying, so that we can have some time to let the market stabilize themselves and not just have people like yourself continually month to month trying to figure out. So those are some of the ideas that we're looking at. We agree with you. I think time will help us see what the market will eventually turn out to for that year. But this constant non-renewals that people are getting just continues to create chaos and uncertainty, which is what we don't want. Right.
California has the admitted plans. In other words, there's kind of a restriction on offer us insurance.
The admitted market, correct.
But would that be a benefit of increasing that list so that add more companies so there's maybe more competition?
Are you referring to the out-of-state companies that come in, the surplus lines or non-admitted companies?
Yes.
Yeah, well... Most non-admitted companies that want to write in the state can write in the state. I mean, they have less capitalization and financial requirements than an admitted company. We wouldn't want to lessen that. We want to make sure when they come into the state that they have enough money to pay claims. So right now, most any company that wants to write in the state can write in the state as long as they follow what rules we have in place. And they're fairly minimal compared to being a fully admitted company, and they have a lot of leeway with regard to rates. In other words, we have a lot more control over admitted companies' rates, and we have no control over on non-admitted or surplus line companies' rates. And so while you may have some availability, we also have a higher price there too. And then the last part of that is the non-admitted companies, if you're on that policy, they're not part of the guarantee association. So if they do happen to go under, then you're not going to have the benefit of that backstop, which is the SIGA backstop, of getting those claims paid.
Which is why we want to incentivize and work with the insurance companies from the admitted market to stay in these communities, because that's where we have the most protection for consumers as opposed to the surplus lines.
I wrote mine down to stay on topic. first, thank you so much for coming out. We hear a lot of feedback that this area is not heard, and so for you to be here, it actually means
thank
a lot.
I appreciate that.
I'm a real estate broker, so from the real estate standpoint, we're all aware many insurance companies are refusing to write policies in the surrounding area due to the fire rating. Homeowners are receiving outright non-renewals or policies that can be 4 to 10 times more than their previous policy. I just had a borrower who was approved for a home purchase and ready to close until we received the policy premium back, which was 4 times that of a regular policy. She was forced into the California Fair Plan, which only covers fire damage and not other perils, which lenders require. So a single mom of 4 kids was required to get 2 policies at a cost of $3,400 a year or $283 a month. This increased her debt ratio above the lending guidelines, so she was forced to cancel the home purchase 2 days ago. For every $50 in an insurance or in an increased monthly insurance policy decreases a borrower's purchase power by $10,000. This is and will have a long-term effect on the housing market in our area. Listings have increased dramatically over these past few months, and values are receding due to an oversupply of homes on the market, along with the lack of qualified buyers because of the increased insurance premiums. Currently in our upcountry market, we have over 200 homes for sale in our area. It's never been seen. We've never seen that. This is the people who can't afford the renewal, and they can't sell their homes for the cost of the insurance. Regarding putting people, you were talking earlier about, somebody mentioned over here about putting people in pools where maybe they have disaster policies. You're already putting people in those pools, and they're the people that live up country in these areas that the insurance is doing this. I'm 43, was born and raised in this area, and have never seen a fire like the one in this area in my entire life. There has also never been, Paradise has never been wiped out before. While I understand the risk that insurance companies take, you know, it's like they know, I'd like to know the combined total amount insurance companies have received in the premiums over the last 43 years compared to the loss statewide in the last 43 years. From the consumer standpoint, I believe there's an obvious risk in insurance, and many years you win and some you lose.
Right.
But with all due respect, I believe that we paid for these losses already. So my question is, what do you foresee is going to be done in these areas where homeowners are getting dropped, can't afford the new policies, and can't sell because the buyer can't afford the insurance?
So first of all, can you email me that question, please?
Because
I want to take that as a testimony, and if you can email it to my staff, would be great. You've essentially, you know, restated exactly what we've been talking about, of what's happening and how we're decimating these communities and why, you know, I understand there's a clause that the Fair Plan can't compete and we can change that. This is why we need a Fair Plan that has comprehensive coverage and doesn't force people to have to go and get wraparound coverage that only contributes to the administrative cost and that puts people over the edge in terms of the amount of money they can borrow for them to buy a house. And this is the reality. And this is why we keep sounding the alarm that this is decimating local communities like yours, and we need to do everything we can and at least be able to force insurance companies to cover those areas of homes that have been hardened, and that we're working with the community to lessen the risk and that we continue to find ways to be able to, you know, tackle the affordability issue. Because one thing is you eventually find coverage, but if you find coverage in a Fair Plan that you're not going to be able to afford, what's the purpose, right? I don't know if you want to.
Yeah. I just want to thank you for your comment, because everything you said was correct. And I think we're seeing it all throughout the state and just some areas that I know things what's worked well in the real estate market is one, shopping. I mean, if you in any market, aside from the fire areas, you're going to, if you get 10 different quotes, you're going to get a variety of premium amounts and also coverage amounts. It's the same thing in these markets. The way the schools of thought that individual brokers have, as well as the tools they use and the carriers they use for the DIC policy or the companion policy, there's going to be differences. Shouldn't be significant, but should be. There's differences between the carriers for sure. So one thing that we that's worked well is if you get a quote in advance to listing the home and put a viable quote, maybe a couple, put them on the MLS. That's worked really well in other markets. And same thing with shoppers when they're going out. Have a partnership with insurance agent that will equip you with a viable quote for whatever addresses you're looking for too, just to give you an idea versus just being concerned, the apprehension of, oh, can I even get insurance on this? You'll know, that way you'll know exactly what it's going to be.
Thank you, Phil. But again, the problem is that people don't, you shop around and you don't get any quotes back or estimates back. That's the problem. Okay, you're going to be the last question or comment. Right. Right.
Right, and this is why I like having these town forums with folks with that are insurance agents and that are real estate agents, because this is really helpful and fruitful, because you're seeing how it's impacting both industries, right? And these are the conversations that we need to continue to have more in Sacramento with legislators, because it's really impacting not only both sectors, but ultimately it's decimating the local economy. And it's really changing the landscape and the future of these communities. And so this is why we're here. And I think today was, again, very fruitful. We take all this information back and want to thank you for your time, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come having this dialogue. I really appreciate your time. And my staff will be here for a couple more minutes, and rest assured, we'll be back. We're going to continue to have these dialogues as we continue to have these conversations with our legislature and our governor. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Said that thing.